welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Our listener support campaign continues, and we're shifting our focus to our one-time donation. We definitely appreciate those as they come throughout the year, in particular during our listener support campaign. And throughout the year, if you do send us a donation, we'll send you access to our premium site for a donation of $7 or more. Now, during the listener support campaign, if you send a donation of $20 or more, I'll send you one of a choice of several ebooks, including All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, All I Needed to Know I Learned from Dragnet, or my mystery novel Slime Incorporated, plus another additional thank you gift for a donation of $20 or more. I pared down some items from previous years that listeners just weren't selecting, so that hopefully we've got a slightly less complex, but representative list nonetheless. We do have a few new items I want to mention, and they are at the donation level of $50 or $100. At the $50 level, we will send you a download of Box 13. RadioArchives.com commissioned a new audiobook based on the popular radio series starring Alan Ladd. So you get an audiobook with six new Box 13 adventures with Dan Holiday. And we will send that along with a donation of $50 or more. You've also heard ads for the Only Living Boy series of graphic novels that are really all ages. I read the first two and I just totally enjoyed them, and I thought they would be great for younger readers as well. And if you live in the U.S. or Canada and you send us a donation of $50 or more, we can send you volume one or volume two of the Only Living Boy graphic novel series. These are written by listener Dave Gallagher, and they're excellent, very evocative of Flash Gordon. They make terrific gifts to get kids into reading, but they're so good that a young at heart adult who was a very careful reader could read through the book before giving it away, or just keep it for themselves. But either way, we will make volume one available for a donation of $50 or more, or volume two. And of course, we'll send you both to the U.S. or Canada for a donation of $100. For just $50 for one. And then at the $100 level, we have Doctor Who, The Fourth Doctor, The Lost Stories. This is an incredible audio drama download created by Big Finish and starring Tom Baker, who for many is the quintessential Doctor Who, having played the role for 7 years. And these are two stories that weren't made for television, but have been produced for audio. And they're simply outstanding stories starring Tom Baker and Louise Jameson. A total of 10 episodes, two separate Doctor Who stories. And we will send it to you with a donation of $100 or more. A full list of available items is at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, now it's time for us to get into today's episode of the lineup, and this will actually be the very last Matt Greb episode we'll be bringing you. So from November the 1st of 1951, here is the Jolted Justice Job Case.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup. Mr. Borden.
Oh, well, hello, Mr. Guthrie. Oh, I mean, Lieutenant Guthrie. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't apologize. Smoke?
I get my pipe, thanks.
Mm-hmm. We think we might have the man you saw going into Mr. Frankley's house this afternoon.
Well, say, that's quick work. You fellas really go after everything, don't you?
We try to.
Yeah, I only saw him for a minute, but I think I can remember him by the pants and the jacket he was wearing.
Well, I hope you can remember his face,
May
too, Mr.
May I Bowman. Have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. At the end of each line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The officers who took your name will assist you. They're seated among you. When the prisoners leave here, they are sent to the washroom and dressed back into their jail clothes. It makes it quite difficult to bring them back after they leave here. The questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice. So do not pay too much attention to their answers, as they often lie. Bring on the line. All right, boys, move it right along, all the way over to the end of the street.
Lieutenant.
Hmm?
There's the man right up there.
Oh, which one?
That tall fella.
Mm. Well, let's wait till he's questioned.
You, number 10, face the front. The front. All right, keep your eyes straight ahead. When I call your number, step out to the circle, answer the question so the people out there can hear you. Okay, number 1, Jack Hanley, burglary. Where do you live?
Bayview, Oregon.
Come on, you'll have to speak up, Jack.
I live in Bayview, Oregon.
Now look, I've told you and every officer you've met around here has told you, when we ask you where you live, we want the address you slept at the night before you were arrested. Is that clear? The rest of you understand it? Okay, Jack.
I don't remember. Some flea bag on East Arapahoe Street. Who remembers that kind of an address?
Were you alone when you were arrested?
No, I was drinking beer with a friend.
What was his name?
His name's Lorraine Price.
Have a gun on you, Jack?
When?
When you were arrested.
Oh, yeah.
All right, what kind?
A Webley Fosbury automatic.
V8 shot?
Yeah, that's right, a 38. Hey, I'll be here a few days. Drop in, say hello. We can talk about guns.
Thanks, I'll do that. Okay, number 2, Frederick Hammer, assault. Come on, hustle it up, Frederick. Where do you live?
5162 South Central.
Louder so the people can hear you, Freddy.
I ain't got nothing to say.
Well, you had quite a bit to say at dinner time tonight. Every cook in the jail kitchen heard you.
I don't like your job.
You'll get used to it. The address again.
5162 South Central Street.
Stand up straight. Take your hands out of your pockets.
I was looking for my lighter.
It's in the property room. What do you do for a living?
Truck driver.
How much do you weigh?
218.
Do you know a man named Frank Iacchino?
Yeah, I know him.
Do you know how much Frank weighs?
How much?
132.
He may not weigh much, but he's got an awful big mouth on him, I tell you that.
We heard all about it, Freddy.
Can I help it if he falls down and cuts his lip?
Concussion.
Concussion, percussion, who cares?
Okay, step back.
He ought to be here studying.
That's enough. Number 3, Rex Gilman, open charge. Where do you live, Rex?
3617 Plymouth Avenue.
Right, take your time.
How long do you live there?
Yes, but I think... Since 47.
What's your business?
Mechanic.
Own a car?
I have a 41.
Yeah, that's him, Lieutenant. Yes, I've been color? Certain of it ever since he
you
walked out on that stage.
Okay. Sergeant Graham.
Yes, sir.
Number 3, hold for interrogation.
Hi.
How's Mr. Frankley?
About the same. Knife wound's pretty bad. A lot of internal bleeding, 3 transfusions so far.
Oh.
Any luck with Frankley's wife?
Divorced in 1948 after 23 years of marriage. She's remarried, living in San Francisco now, I wired.
Carger's at the hospital sweating it out now. I relieve him at midnight. Nash will follow up about 4. Frankley has anything to say, we'll get it done.
Good. No prints on the kitchen knife that make any sense. We're still hoping on some they picked up on a glass.
What about Gilman?
Borton identified him.
Claude Abrams is in your office. He's Frankley's attorney. Advised Frankley on how to handle the thing with Gilman. Met him at the hospital.
Oh.
Mr. Abrams, this is Lieutenant Guthrie.
Oh, glad to meet you, Lieutenant.
How do you do? Keep your seat, Mr. Abrams. I understand you advised Mr. Frankley about this matter with Gilman, Mr. Abrams.
Yes, I explained that he could take it to court, but I tried to talk him out of taking action because of the expense involved. However, he insisted. I even called on Gilman at his garage and explained what Mr. Frankley was going to do, hoping Gilman might rectify his mistake or refund the money.
And what was Gilman's attitude?
Persecuted. Called Mr. Frankley several names.
Mm. Mr. Frankley have plenty of money?
Almost $250,000.
Still got it?
All except what Lillian, his wife, took from him.
Seems funny he'd create so much ruckus over a small matter like this with the garage men if he has all that money. Well, I won't keep you any longer, Mr. Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Frankley ever mentioned someone named Fay?
Not that I recall. We didn't mix socially.
He mentioned the name several times in coma.
Lieutenant, do you think that garage man did this to Mr. Frankley?
That's what we're trying to find out, Mr. Abrams. Okay.
Just sit in that chair, Gilman.
Okay.
No. That one.
Hi.
Okay. My name's Ben Guthrie. You know Sergeant Greb. You know why you're here?
Something about Frankley.
He's in pretty serious condition, Gilman. He was beaten up and stabbed. We picked you up because we learned that you had words with Frankley about some work you did for him. What about it?
Well, I did what he asked me to do. I put white sidewalls on his tires, and I told him I couldn't guarantee the job. When it didn't work out and they turned yellow, he got nasty about it. I told him to stay away from my garage.
Did you threaten Mr. Frankley?
No, I didn't threaten him. I just told him he better not try to take me to court over it, a little thing like that.
What did you mean when you told him that?
Well, I meant that he better not do it, that's all.
Well, what I want to know is what alternative action did you have in mind?
None. I just didn't want him to do it. It's kind of hot in here. Can I...
No, you were talking about the tire business. You must have had something in mind.
I suppose I did. I don't know.
What?
I don't know.
And what's the matter with your hand?
I was reaching for the light switch in the dark, and the back of my hand touched the wall. It's rough plaster.
Well, it seems to me you'd put the palm of your hand against the wall to feel for the switch.
There's an extra wall by my switch. It's just a little office they built in when I leased the joint. You have to go in sort of like this, and that's the wall I brushed.
With the back of your hand?
Yeah.
I don't quite get the picture there. What is it, a little partition or what, that comes out by the switch?
It's just part of the wall in a little area.
And you hit it with the back of your hand, reaching for the light switch?
Look, if you don't believe me, mister, go down and look for yourself. Or send one of your sergeants down there. Maybe one of them's got brains enough to figure out how it could happen.
Maybe.
You know, you guys make me sick with your questions. If the answer you get doesn't ring the bell, you're going to be real tough about it. Real tough. Don't sit there. Sit here. Don't take off your coat. Don't raise the window. Don't smoke. Nuts. You guys make me sick. Sergeant, lieutenant. But I'll laugh. Just like those wonder boys I ran into in the army. They don't know how to do anything but keep their pants pressed and their shaving gear 2 inches from their toothbrushes in field inspection. I've seen enough of you cops today to last me all my life. You really make me sick.
Anything else, Gilman?
Yeah. When you're out pounding around waiting for that 30 years to end so you can get your rocking chair money, I'll be able to buy and sell both of you and all the rest of these guys around here.
When Sergeant Asher and Sergeant Quine questioned you earlier, did they ask you if you'd seen Mr. Frankley today?
Yeah.
What did you tell him?
I told him no.
Did they ask you if you'd gone over to his house today?
Sure.
Well?
I told him no.
Doesn't quite check, Gilman. Mr. Borden lives right across the street from Mr. Frankley's house. He picked you out of the lineup tonight and identified you as the man who went up the walk to Mr. Frankley's house about 1:30 today.
Okay. Yeah, I was there.
Where?
At Frankley's house.
At 1:30?
Yeah, but he wasn't there. I didn't see him. Now, look, you guys, I went over there to see him about the attachment and the summons. He sued me for that lousy little bill. He wasn't home. I tied up my bank account this morning with some kind of a writ. Well, he wasn't there. Look, do you think I beat him up and stick a knife in him for that?
When you went to his house, did you ring the bell?
No.
Did you knock?
No. Look, I was pretty hot about the attachment and the summons. When I got to the house, I thought maybe he'd see me coming up the walk from his window or something and wouldn't answer the door. So I just opened it and walked in. I wanted to see him. I could say things to him in his house that I couldn't say to him in a courtroom.
Things about the white side walls?
Yeah.
What'd you see in his house?
What'd I see? Nothing. He wasn't around. I yelled his name a couple of times and then left.
Did you go through the house?
No.
Not even to the kitchen?
No.
After you left his house, where'd you go?
Back to my garage.
The boy at your garage told Sergeant Asher you didn't get back until after 3 o'clock.
Well, I stopped and had lunch. I forgot. Well,
what'd you have for lunch?
Well, I stopped at some beanery on Tremont Street. I found a parking place, and then I had a sandwich and a couple of beers.
We asked you earlier if you'd been to Frankly's house this afternoon. You said you hadn't. Why did you deny that you'd been there?
What do you mean?
Well, what are we supposed to think, Rex? We're trying to find out what happened to Mr. Frankly. You tried to hide that part of it from us. We'll have to hold you. Check into your story more thoroughly.
Well, how are you going to check what I've told you? I didn't have anyone around to prove he wasn't there in the house when I went in.
Oh, you're wrong. There's one witness, Gilman.
Who?
Lawrence Frankly.
Tomorrow night, most of these same stations bring you Earl Wrightson and Alfredo Antonini's orchestra with Jimmy Carroll and a fine singing cast in a musical salute to Rodgers and Hart. Hear composer Richard Rodgers himself and hear the wonderful show tunes Rodgers and Hart penned for unforgettable Broadway productions. That's tomorrow night, part of your Friday night family music parade on CBS Radio.
Scrub these places with ether?
I don't think they even use it anymore.
It always smells the same.
Yeah.
Hi, Ben. Matt.
Hi.
Hi.
Just in time. Down here.
Think you'll make it?
Well, we'll keep trying. Don't take too long. He's awfully weak. I'll want to put him under sedative as soon as you're finished.
Okay, Dan.
Now, look. When we get in the room, Gilman, and just keep your mouth shut, do what you're told.
Better put your cigarette in that.
Oh.
Okay, now remember what I said.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Asher's in with him now.
Please state your full name.
Up close to the bed, Gilman.
All right.
Lawrence J. Franklin.
Where do you live?
3232 Humboldt Street.
How old are you, Mr. Franklin?
I'm 53.
I understand that you're seriously hurt. Is that true?
Well, that's what the doctors tell me.
Are you willing to make a true and full statement of how and in what manner you came to the injury from which you're suffering?
Closer, Gilman, closer. Right under the light.
Can you hear me, Mr. Franklin?
Yes.
Who caused the injury from which you're suffering? Was it this man? Do you recognize him?
Yes. Gilman, the man at the garage.
Did he cause you these injuries?
I did.
Shut up.
Mr. Frankly?
What?
Is Rex Gilman the man who beat you up and attacked you with a knife in your home today? Mr. Frankly, we have good reason to believe this man attacked you. Will you please tell us if he's the one? Mr. Frankly...
No.
Rex Gilman did not attack you?
No.
Hey, what did I tell you?
I told you to shut up.
Well, who did attack you, Mr. Frankly? Who did this to you?
It was a woman.
Well, what was her name, Mr. Frankly? Where can we find her?
Well,
You've been repeating the name Fay in your delirium. Was it Fay? Fay who?
Go away. I don't want to have anything done about it.
Mr. Frankly, I... Doc.
That's all, Ben.
Guys, I told you.
Get him out of here, Matt.
Come on. I told you. You guys are going to look pretty silly, boy. Oh, when I open up my mouth, there'll be newspaper I can find.
Nurse, get the floor orderly and notify the morgue.
One?
Hmm? Oh, thanks.
Thanks. Doc, you sure he knew what he was saying?
You heard him answer everything else.
Yeah.
Frankly, he's been having a time for himself ever since his divorce 3 years ago. Advertised in the papers and joined a Lonely Hearts Club. Met several women.
Mm. A man like Frankly using that means to meet a woman. Sound funny to you, Ben?
Yeah. Well, maybe he had something definite in mind about the kind of woman he wanted to meet.
Well, he saw three of them pretty regularly, all fairly young for him. Ellen Bennett, age 29, a city stenographer. Madge Givens, age 29, the city waitress. Laura Vickers, age 31, the city also waitress. No one named Faye.
Second names?
Helen May, Madge Diana, Laura Christine.
Well, we have enough suspects.
Yeah, and more coming. He was having all sorts of fun. Carger and Murphy are trying to locate the Givens woman. Laura Vickers, married 8 months ago, lives out on the coast. Helen Bennett's in the interrogation room with Patterson Carter. She says Frankly asked her to marry him last month. She turned him down. They're still talking to her.
Hi.
Hi.
Billy and Grant came up with something.
Oh? Been re-questioning people in the neighborhood. Woman came to see Frankly twice last week. Saw him often. Drove a new cad convertible, blue.
Well, that doesn't sound like a waitress or stenographer.
Well, what about these? Nothing like them. This one's in early 40s. Blonde, nice-looking, well-groomed. Three different people who remember seeing her said she was one of those kind you could give 10 or 12 more years and still not tell the difference.
Anything on the car?
No license number. Man named Masterson was pretty sure he's noticed a Cherry Hills plate frame on it. No cab dealers in Cherry Hills. We're checking dealers all over town. I put some men on auto supply stores, too. If she bought the plate frames, one of them might have put them on for her.
Mm-hmm. Better call Park Hill Division. That's nearest to Cherry Hills. Mm. Give them the stuff you have. Blue cad convertibles aren't too plentiful even there.
Okay. Oh, I talked to your witness, Borden, again.
You remember her?
Yeah. Said she always wore nice sport clothes. When the weather was nicer, saw her come by one day with some golf clubs stacked in the back of her car.
Guthrie?
Carger just called in. Tracked down Frankly's landlady. Name's Faye Seelig.
Good. What's the address?
2479 Vista, Cherry Hills.
Right.
Yes?
Lieutenant Guthrie, police. Miss Sergeant Greb. May we come in, please?
Well, yes. May I have your coats?
Well, that won't be necessary. I'm only going to stay a minute. We'd like to get a little information from you, if possible, about Lawrence Frankly.
Oh?
Yes, we understand you were his landlady.
I own the house on Humboldt Street. Larry rented it from me, but I dislike the title landlady.
Oh, sorry. I suppose you read about his death in the papers.
Yes, of course. I was very upset over it. I've known Larry for a long time.
Well, maybe you can tell us something that'll give us a hint as to what actually happened at his home last Tuesday afternoon.
Well, I'm sure I don't know.
In his coma, Mr. Frankly mentioned the name Fay several times. That's your name, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you have any idea why he'd mention your name?
No idea.
Well, according to people our men have talked to in the neighborhood, you drop by to see Mr. Frankly quite often.
What people?
Oh, just people in the neighborhood. Was he a good friend of yours?
He was an old friend of Doug's, my late husband. Why would these people talk to you about me?
Well, they didn't talk about you, Mrs. Seeley. They just remembered you and the car you drove and that you saw Mr. Frankly quite often.
That's why you're here?
That's right. When was the last time you visited Mr. Frankly?
Oh, last month, I think.
Do you know Helen Bennett?
Should I?
Mr. Frankly was intending to marry her at one time not so long ago. Thought he might have mentioned it to you.
No. Larry, contemplating a second marriage, I'm surprised.
Well, he was in good health, had money, no responsibilities. Seemed good marriage material.
Oh, you misunderstand me. I've always thought of Larry as a wonderful catch, but he often mentioned to me that he'd never trust another woman and that he'd never marry again.
When did he tell you that?
Many times, last week, in fact.
Well, a moment ago, you said you hadn't seen him for over a month. Did you forget?
Yes, I suppose I did. We had dinner together last week. Are you trying to confuse me?
Now, this is a personal question, Mrs. Seelig, but we'd appreciate an honest answer to it. Did you ever think of marrying Mr. Frankly yourself?
I suppose so.
You ever talk about it?
I suppose we did, yes. But I've explained how he felt, and I've been quite aware of his feelings for some time.
Well, what you say about Mr. Frankly's attitude toward women puzzles me, Mrs. Seelig. We've learned that he had correspondence with several. Saw two or three regularly, besides the woman named Helen Bennett.
You're talking about that silly Lonely Hearts thing, aren't you?
Yes.
Larry had an obtuse sense of humor, writing all those women and meeting them. A man with his education and social background and connections, honestly. I know all about it. It's been going on ever since Lillian left him.
Well, we'd like to hear what you have to say about it, if you don't mind, Mrs. Seeley.
Oh, dear, I'm late now. I have an appointment for lunch downtown.
Could you cancel it?
I certainly could not.
Mrs. Seelig, we're investigating a homicide. We've got to check into everything. You may be able to help us a great deal.
Well, I'll try and telephone my friend. Excuse me, please.
Certainly.
Well, what do you think, Ben?
Nice woman. Very attractive.
Yeah. Boy, look at this. I'll bet this living room set cost $2,000 if it cost a bit.
Hey, what was that?
Well, it isn't a telephone. The bathroom.
Yeah. It's locked. Okay, Matt.
Yeah.
Hey, she's taking something.
No.
What did you take, Mrs. Seeley?
I won't. Here it is, Ben. Oh, Lysol.
Kitchen must be in the back somewhere. Eggs or milk should do it.
Yeah, right, Ben.
I want to die.
Now lie quiet, Mrs. Seelig, and don't talk.
Here, get out of here.
What are you doing?
Quiet. Now here, drink it.
No.
Drink it.
Here we are, Ben. Okay. I'll get her head.
All right, come on now. Try this.
No. No.
Go away. Anything I can do?
Just a minute.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, it got down.
I never became angry like that before in my life. I hit him with my handbag. It started his ear to bleeding. When I hit him again, he stumbled and started toward me. I became very frightened.
This all happened in the kitchen?
Yes.
All right, go on.
He didn't try to hit me back, but he did try to hold my arms. I saw the knife laying there on the board, and I used it. I thought he was dead when I left. You have no idea what it's like. Knowing he was with her.
Are you talking about Helen Bennett?
And all the others, too. I would have made Larry a good wife. We were perfectly matched. I told him. I'd have been a wife he could take to his club and introduce to people. One he'd have been proud to do things with. Travel and things. We'd have made a nice couple.
But Mr. Frankly didn't want it that way. Is that it?
He wanted something else. Them. waitresses, stenographers. Do I look 46 years old, Lieutenant?
No, I wouldn't say so.
My friends tell me I could pass for 35. Larry was nearly 50. Maybe past it. I could have made him happy. Certainly given him more than Lillian ever gave him. She let herself put on weight and didn't watch her clothes. A woman should keep herself up. Don't you think?
Yes.
Yes. We'd have made a nice couple. We could have had a wonderful life together.
Before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name.
Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie and Wally Mayer as Sergeant Matt Greb, was written by E. Jack Newman with music composed and conducted by Eddie Dunstetter. Featured in tonight's cast were High Averback, Howard McNear, Lou Krugman, Dave Young, Bob Sweeney, Sidney Miller, and Virginia Gregg. The Lineup is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Company, hope you'll all be on hand to join them this Saturday evening when songbird Betty Cox drops in to sing. They'll all be heard on CBS Radio as usual, and you're invited to help yourself to the Monroe-style rhythm this Saturday evening on most of these same stations. Speaking, and remember, you'll enjoy Theater of Today every Saturday in the daytime hours on the CBS Radio Network.
This is Adam Graham for The Only Living Boy, Volume 2. The Jungle Book meets the island of Dr. Moreau in the second volume, The Only Living Boy, Beyond Sea and Sky, on sale now from award-winning authors David Gallagher and Steve Ellis. Recently nominated as one of the best comics for younger readers for the 2016 Harvey Awards, The Only Living Boy is an action-adventure series for the young and young at heart. Captain America and Flash author Mark Waid says Paul Pope and Jack Kirby never had a chance to work together, but if they had, it would be only slightly less awesome than this. The Only Living Boy is ready to join the ranks of books like Bone and Amulet, amulet as one of the very best, says Blaster. The Only Living Boy, Beyond Sea and Sky, is on sale now, wherever great graphic novels are sold. Learn more at papercuts.com. That's papercuts with a Z.com. You're listening to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. Welcome back. Well, these were some great scenes over radio. These are the type of things you would associate with Dragnet, but I don't recall Dragnet doing quite this way. In particular, getting a woman who had committed suicide or tried to commit suicide and immediately providing the poison relief. The dying confession, I think they might have done at some point. Though, to be fair, I think Guthrie was kind of leading the witness in a way. It's like, did he kill... Is this the guy who did it? No, we really think he was the guy who did it. I don't know. I think if anyone testified to that, they might have a little problem in court. And we begin now our listener comment section with a comment from Jeffrey, who says the episode could not have been broadcast in March 1951. The end commercial was for the Rose Bowl, which was played on January 1st, 1951. Michigan beat California 14-6. And Jeffrey went back and checked and says this was the Elmsnore case that aired on December 28th, 1950. Well, Jeffrey, thanks for your heads up. Like I said, it did sound familiar. I should have caught the Rose Bowl bit at the end, but I can miss football-related clues. Thankfully, I'm not a detective who has to rely on such little points. I will say that there was another episode that I'd initially identified as one I didn't quite recognize and thought might be a lost episode and was identified as such by the group that issued this set and the episodes we've been listening to, but I was able to ferret that one out because it had an air date that identified an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in one of their commercials. And I realized it's not the right story. So I'll notify the organization that put these out of the discrepancy so that they don't get mislabeled again. And I'll remove it from the lineup feed so that listeners who are listening through the lineup don't accidentally hear that one twice. Like I had said at the time, I thought I'd heard it before, but it's tough to tell, particularly with the lineup, and they did rebroadcast and reperform a couple different scripts. So I appreciate your eagle ears. Well, not quite right, but you know what I mean. Thanks so much, Jeffrey. And then we have a comment from Jack, who actually follows up on another comment. He says, hey, Bob Bailey was in that lineup movie last week on TCM. Played a bad guy in a white trench coat. Interesting. Have not seen too much of Bob Bailey's filmography. I did see a short film he did for the Army back in the 40s, but I'll be interested to see the movie. I've added it to my Amazon wish list, and thanks for the tip, Jack. I'll also be interested to see how the lineup looked in live action, even though it was the movie and not the TV show that was on for so long. All right, well, our listener support campaign does continue. Support, you can support it, support.greatdetectives.net. We do have a lot of great items from the $20 and up. Among those are the great Colonial Radio Theater audio dramas. Among them, we have five different Perry Mason releases. And these are not based on the TV show. These are based on the original novels, which have got a different feel, but they're very true to the 1930s feel. And I heartily recommend them. And they are available donation of $20 or more, along with King Solomon's Mine and Zorro and the Pirate Raiders. Finally, at the $100 level, we have BBC Radio 4's Poirot's Finest Cases, starring John Moffat, in eight separate Poirot full-cast audio dramas. These are generally about an hour and a half to two-plus hours long. These are really full adaptations, and they include great stories like Murder on the Orient Express, The ABC Murders, and Death on the Nile, which is actually my favorite Poirot story. And that is available with a donation of $100 or more. A list of available thank you gifts is at support.greatdetectives.net. But that will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for Richard Diamond, and next Tuesday, another episode of The Lineup. In the meantime, send your comments to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.